And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 642. Wrapping up the NL East with the Washington Nationals. Gonna have some fun talking to someone who helped me preview the Nationals last year. It's a fun team, at least for the fantasy world. There's actually some things to discuss for once, which is good. You can find her work over on fantrax.com. She's on Twitter at LK Auerbach. Lauren Auerbach, how are we doing, my friend?
I'm good, Bubba. Thanks for having me here. I was telling you earlier before the show that I love this series that you do, and I'm glad to be back for season two of it.
Yep. I appreciate it. I've been telling most people that I got about 80 to 85% of the people back to do the teams, which is fun to me. Like I mentioned it on the Philly show that I did that will come out the day before yours, that it's nice that basically everybody wants to come back for the most part. And they're always the first call. So it's one of those things, like I've told them, if you continue to want to do it, you're the first one. And that's the beauty of it. And it's fun to talk some Nationals baseball with you. Before we get started, though, let everybody know what you got going on at Fantrax these days. If you're
up to I mean, right now I'm kind of in the off season. I write for both baseball and football for them. And I haven't done actually a lot of off season stuff yet, but once the season, we get closer to the season, I'll probably be churning out more articles. So that's where you can find me. You can also, like you said, find me at Twitter at LK Auerbach, although I'm a little hit or miss over there. I always say I'll try and be better, but still working on that.
You have a life. It's okay. You're not like the rest of us.
Well, you know.
It's good. It's not a problem at all. But before we start talking players for the 2024 season, what were your thoughts on how the real life Nationals turned out in 2023?
Well, you know, I think it was a little bit of a mixed bag, right? You know, they finished at the bottom of the division. That wasn't surprising. But what was surprising was some of the performances of some of these hitters, and that we'll talk about a little bit later. You know, it was really fun to see Lane Thomas put up career numbers, and it was really cool to see, you know, prospects like CJ Abrams, Keibert Ruiz have strong seasons. And I think that, you know, kind of seeing that was encouraging, especially since this team is in rebuild mode, because sometimes as a fan, you know, it's tough to trust the process sometimes. You know, you trade away your superstars, you get a bunch of, you know, prospects in return. They don't necessarily all pan out. So to kind of see, at least on the hitting side of the Nationals, there's a little bit of hope. So that was good. You know, I say mixed bag because on the other side of the spectrum, you have the pitching, and there's really no way to sugarcoat it. It's not very good. It wasn't fun to watch. And, you know, my concern is that the kind of the pitching will really slow this rebuild up. But there's highs and lows, but I'll take those highs, you know, where you can get them.
Yep, no doubt about it. I totally understand that. And in 2024, might be a lot of the same. Hitting's fun. Pitching, when I put the outline together, I was just like, man, I haven't done anything to fix this problem. But we'll get to that in a minute. Let's start with the bats, though. We'll start with Lane Thomas, who you mentioned earlier. And it was great to see the breakout of Lane Thomas, you know, 28 homers, 20 steals. That's a monster season. Hit .268, which is nice. Even scored over 100 runs, which is big in a Nats offense that it's good, but not like prolific by any means. Right. Right now, it's over like the last, you know, 16 or so drafts in draft champions, he's going around 113. Are you buying into this Lane Thomas? Do you expect regression, or what are your thoughts for 2024?
I expect a little bit of a regression. I think he kind of came out of nowhere that he had, you know, 28 homers. Like you said, he did up, you know, a lot of his power metrics, but I do expect some regression. I kind of view him more as a low kind of 20 to 22 kind of, or 2023, homer guy. I see him more on the steals department as kind of, you know, maybe 18 to 20 or 15 to 20. I think the batting average will take a step back as well. You'll see it maybe kind of in the 250s, 260 range, I think. But I still think he'll give you a lot of strong counting stats. And, I don't mean to poo-poo him or anything. I think that he'll definitely be a five category bat. I would dial back some expectations of him. And I will say, I'm very happy to have him, you know, if he was my outfielder three. I think that it's important to remember that outfielders this season aren't exactly growing on trees. So in drafts that I've been doing so far in this offseason, I've been trying to kind of push up outfielders. And I'm perfectly comfortable with having him, like I said, as my outfielder three.
Yeah, it's a great point. The outfielders get drops off pretty quickly, especially getting everyday outfielders that give you the production, the 2020 upside that a Blaine Thomas can give you. So I guess what's keeping him up the draft boards, and I think if he's an outfielder three for you, you're doing pretty good with things. So I'm 100% on board with that one. Let's go to CJ Abrams, a guy we were both very, very high on this show last year. I joke with people that when you're dumb enough to do gladiators like myself and others are, you're basically planting flags on players early on. That's just kind of how you're doing it, because you're just praying in December when you're doing most of these drafts, some in January, that they work. And on two of my three gladiators, I had CJ Abrams. Mm-hmm. So I was pretty pumped on the results there. Slow start, but it's kind of like we talked about, young player finally getting a chance to run and play every day. 18 homers, 47 steals, 245 average. You do have to pay for him now, though. ADP is 40. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts on Abrams this year, especially at that ADP?
I will say the last draft that I took, and keep in mind it was a 12-teamer, but I did take him at 45. And where I was picking, I was fourth, so it was the back end of the fourth round. And I was perfectly comfortable taking him there. I have seen he does have a range from, like, I think like 31 to 53. 30s, like, that's too soon for me, I think. But like I said, I was fine at the 45 range of the 12-teamer. You know, like you said, I think that this was someone who, you know, Abrams was someone who started off slow. He did a lot of his damage in the second half. I've, you know, seen some people reference, you know, is he going too high, primarily because, you know, he really had this amazing July, right? And then he was a little bit all over the place for the whole season. But what I would kind of counter that with is that, you know, at the beginning of July was when he was promoted to the leadoff spot. And from that point on, he really took off. He literally took off. You know, he stole 36 of his 47 bases once he landed in the leadoff spot. And I think more importantly, when you kind of look at some of his gains in the second half, you know, he improved his plate approach. He struck out less. He walked more. For him, this is a guy who struggled to get on base, which isn't, you know, the best combo for a leadoff hitter, but he did make improvements. And I think, you know, that's important to see. It's what you want to see. And like I said, a lot of that production came in the second half. So if you're looking at a player that last season, you know, stole 47 bases, 36 from the back half of the season, he should be starting, you know, in that number one spot this season. So get a full season of CJ Abrams at the leadoff spot. I love it. You know, I think that he's going to get a bunch of runs. I should mention that he's also, it's not like he's, you know, just a rabbit where he's not contributing anywhere else. You know, he also popped 18 home runs last season. So this season, I kind of like him for 15 to 18 home runs, 90 plus runs. I think he easily, you know, 50 to 60 stolen bases is absolutely in the cards for Abrams, I think, this season. And if his plate improvements stick, I think that batting average rises. He ended it with 245 last season, excuse me. I would not be surprised if that's kind of like 250, 255 range. So I really like CJ Abrams. I think just the upside in the steals, you also get a little pop. He's not killing you with that batting average and strong run production. I will take that like every day.
Yeah, a lot of great points there on CJ, because you're right. You hear the narrative, oh, it was a great July or the rest of the year, yada, yada. I guess, yeah, if you want to break it down, sure. But it goes back to at least what we were saying last year, I still believe in. That was his first full season of going. There's still development. He's still so young that, like you said, the plate skills continue to get better. Now he's a 255 hitter, which changes run production, changes RBIs even, not just run production. Maybe the power develops even more as he gets maybe bigger, as we see these guys do on a day-to-day basis, and the speed is as legit as it comes. So it is very, very intriguing to see where it, like, we haven't seen the ceiling for CJ Abrams, which is fun. Now the draft price, like you mentioned, is tough. The 30-ish pick is not my bag. That's mm-hmm. that's not where I'll be, but like you said, a 45 to 50-ish, something like that, that's pretty darn appealing. Like, you can start doing some things, building your roster in a 12-team league. Now you're talking about your fourth pick, potentially, or at least late third round on the 3-4 turn type stuff. And that becomes very, very appealing on draft. Mm-hmm. You said 45. So, yeah, you're sitting there on the back ends and doing some stuff. So that's definitely a way to approach the CJ Abrams, I think, instead of just crossing them off like so many are. When they see that ADP, there is a way to definitely build. And he is more of a five category guy, which are at least 4.5, depending on how anal you want to get about things, that makes it very, very appealing to me as well. Joey Meneses, this is one I've heard some fun conversations on this year, because was it a down season for Meneses standards? Yes, 13 home runs. Then again, he did that in 2022 in 56 games. He played a full season last year. You expected more power. It came on as the season went on. I'll say that much. You saw some improvements as the season went on, but still not what you want from Joey Meneses. Util only also is kind of a bummer for him. He missed the first base cutoff by one game last year. But ADP of 362, not paying a premium for Joey Meneses. What are your thoughts on him maybe, you know, coming back to that 20-ish home run guy and giving us some production there?
I don't know that I buy, say, a 20 home run season. I know Steamer has him projected for that. I'm a little bit skeptical of it. And I will say, before we go off about Joey Meneses, is that I did pick him to lead the team in home runs last season. So I will take the zero on that. But, you know, like you said, he hit 13 home runs in 56 games in 2022. And then he only hit 13 in 154 games in 2023. So when you kind of look a little bit under the hood, some of his power metrics, you know, they really took a hit last season. You know, his barrel rate was cut in half to 5.4%. His hard hit rate dropped to 41.7%. And you really saw, you know, his home run per fly ball rate take a beating, going from 25.5% to 8.6%. So that wasn't good. But what I will say is where he lacked in home runs, he made up for in driving runs in. He led the team in RBI with 89. And with runners in scoring position, he really, you know, he really mashed. He slashed a 363, 396, 494 line with runners in scoring position. So he played that DH position pretty well. And I will say with regards to, you know, where is his power this season, it's worth noting that he did have patellar tendonitis last year. So he was playing through a knee injury that he picked up in winter ball in 2022. And I think that the Nationals put him kind of over in DH to mask that a little bit. And so I still think that he's going to be a primary DH for this team. But maybe, you know, that knee issue was affecting how he was putting weight, you know, or if he was swinging differently or something. So you see the power metrics go down, but it may be because of injury. So I don't know. I think looking at, you know, 2024, I like him for kind of around 15 home runs, probably, you know, I don't know, about 130 runs RBI combo, no steals, but I do think that you get a solid batting average out of him. I would say also about Joey Meneses is that if you think that he's going to get, if you're planning on him getting kind of first base eligibility, I kind of slow the brakes on that. You know, the Nationals really want him to play DH. And like you said, he missed the cutoff for eligibility by one game. But they said that they're open to putting him at first base, but they really prefer him over at DH. And I think with Joey Gallo entering this lineup now, he also is going to be playing between, you know, DH first and outfield. So it's a little bit cloudy on roles right now. But I would not count on Meneses necessarily getting that first base tag sooner rather than later.
It's a good call because, like, people want to draft him, hoping he'll get it. You can get that flexibility, especially in a draft and hold format. If he doesn't get it, Util only obviously pigeonholes you into one position, which I'm not opposed to drafting Util only guys, but that flexibility can be pretty nice.
Yeah, and I will say, too, though, that when you're talking about that range that he's going in, you know, he's going around guys that kind of have clear holes, you know, whether it's playing time or batting average or something. I mean, Joey Meneses will be playing. He will be playing every day. So he does have that secured playing time. And so if you don't mind, you know, a util only, and maybe if he gets first base eligibility, he's going to be playing every day. And like I said, maybe his power will go up a little bit if his knee is fully healthy. And he's a dude who can drive and runs, and he played that role really well. And hopefully you see an uptick in power this year.
Yep. No, it makes a lot of sense. Definitely someone to try to buy the uptick on. Talking about a guy that really started coming into his own is Kyber Ruiz. We know the talent was there. Big time catching prospect from the Dodgers, came over a few years ago. This was his second full season with the Nats. And we saw the power jump from 7 to 18 last year, which is Not bad in the age 24 season. The batting average 260, kind of who he is. I guess the question for people drafting is the power legit with Kiber Ruiz? ADP of 168. He's not a bad later catcher one potentially. So how do you look at Kiber Ruiz? Because I'm a fan if you miss out on some guys going before him.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm a big fan of Kiber Ruiz. And I think with regard to power, yeah, it's kind of like, oh, wait, where'd that come from? You know, but I still think, and if you look at, you know, a lot of projections, anywhere from Steamer to ATC, they both give him 16 and 17 home runs. So I think that you can probably pencil in 15 to 18 home runs with Ruiz. And, you know, like you mentioned, he's going to give you a plus batting average. You know, he has elite contact rates, and he really came on strong in the second half. And I think, you know, you said this. I think like right now he's going around catcher 14 or 15, which I feel like this is like where he always goes. But I would have no problem in a 12 team, one catcher league, you know, grabbing him as my catcher, as, you know, the last one off the board, because he's going to give you some power and he's got that batting average. I really like him. He's going to be sitting at the probably the top third of the lineup. And so he's going to be getting, you know, plate appearances, and those sometimes aren't easy to come by with catchers. Also combine that with a plus batting average and a little bit of pop. I like Kiber Ruiz a lot. I'm a little bit higher than consensus on it. I have him actually as my catcher 12. And so I have no problem taking him, even though catcher is a little bit deeper this year.
Yeah, no, I've taken him as catcher one in a few leagues. Love taking him as a catcher two with some of my guys. Big fan of that, because at worst he's going to get you a very solid batting average from the catcher's position and a little bit else to go middle of the order, like you said, that'll add up as well. Really curious your thoughts here, because Stone Garrett was having a heck of a run once he started to play regularly for the Nationals, and then had one of the most gruesome injuries you've ever seen with the fibula fracture, needed surgery. Still came up with 9 homers in 89 games, hit 269. Right now his ADP is around 488, give or take. And it's kind of up in the air if he'll be ready for opening day. But how do you look at Stone Garrett from a fantasy perspective? Because when he was on the field right before the injury, it was very, very productive.
I really like Stone Garrett. I think he's the one player in this Nationals lineup that if I had to pick who would kind of take a step forward in value, like a significant step, to me it would be Stone Garrett. Like you said, I mean, he was originally brought on the Nationals to be kind of a short side platoon bat and be a defensive replacement in outfield. And he was playing well enough. I mean, he was just mashing lefties. He had a 246 ISO versus lefties and an 839 OPS versus lefties. So he was playing his role really well, to the point where Davey Martinez started giving him more everyday bats, essentially, at the end of the season. And he was holding his own versus righties. You know, he had a 758 versus righties, and he was just kind of cruising. And then, like you said, it was a heartbreaker. You know, he broke his leg on a defensive play and it ended his season. So the Nats hadn't really fully seen him. And so I think, you know, what I like about Stone Garrett is I think that right now, as this roster is constructed and assuming that he's healthy and he's out of his boot, he's already started running and hitting. So assuming that he's ready to go for spring training and is healthy, I think that they will throw him out there every day just to see what they have. You know, I think one reason is they didn't get to see it last season. And, you know, the other reason is maybe, you know, by necessity. You know, the Nationals don't have a lot of depth really anywhere. And especially in that outfield. So I think that they will try and throw him out there. And I think, you know, with him going kind of just inside the top 500, is that what you said?
Yes.
Yeah. He's someone I would absolutely take a dart throw on just because, you know, I'm curious to see what he has. He has a bunch of power, and it's one of those things I would be more interested in taking him in leagues where, you know, you have FAB and you can do in-season acquisitions, only because if he doesn't do well against righties, he will be kind of relegated to probably a short side platoon bat. But, like I said, this is a guy who, we're sitting and talking about the Nationals next season. I wouldn't be surprised if his, value has gone up significantly.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, no, he's a guy I stare at in a lot of draft rooms. I'm like, I'd love some injury news, people. Give me something. I know it's that time of the year where they don't, because we probably shouldn't be drafting already. But that's what we do, and it could be like one of those. If you, like you said, boots off, starts running and hitting, and we see him at spring training, and he looks healthy, that ADP could come up quite a bit. Luis Garcia, going to be playing second base most likely for the Nats. And he's a guy that we've seen a very good hit tool in the minors, and it has had its ups and downs when he's had his chance, especially like there's not a ton of power, it seems like. Batting average is there. But he's still super young also, so maybe it's one of those situations. Right now he's got an ADP of 388, so he's not costing you a ton. Is there interest in a guy like Luis Garcia? Because he's not going to ever be CJ Abrams like last year, but is there an avenue for some more success?
Yeah, I mean, I like him. He's someone I may like a little bit more in real life than in fantasy. He's interesting in the, kind of what you said. I mean, he hits for a good average. He makes a ton of good contact. He is really young. He was sent down to AAA in August of last season for about a month, and he came back, and it's a very small sample size. But when he came back and played in September, he played some of the best ball of his season. You know, he posted a career high 867 OPS. He hit three of his nine home runs in September. He also had a 134 WRC plus for the month. Again, it's a small sample size. But it's things that you like to see. You know, you referenced he's young, he's 23 years old. So, you know, this is when you're kind of making these adjustments. And I think if you combine that with the fact that, you know, you look at his overall season and he made improvements to his plate approach, he dropped his K rate by 10 points, which is ridiculous. Went all the way down to 12.4. He upped his walk rate, which he was having issues with. He also upped his zone contact rate, 8 points to 91%. So he's got elite contact rates. He has a little bit of pop, a little bit of speed. I think of him kind of as a 10, 10, 270 guy. And I think that he's definitely useful in deeper leagues, whether it's, you know, for your middle infielder position or a bench bat, because he's not really hurting you anywhere. The thing is, you know, with where he's going, if you're looking for a little bit more upside, I don't think there's a lot of upside with Luis Garcia. So it just kind of depends how your league is and I think how you've constructed. But, you know, like I said, nothing kind of jumps off the page with him, but he's not hurting you anywhere. So, you know, depending on the depth of your league. I will say actually the one thing that is not good is that he has a 54% ground ball rate. So that really kind of kills him. So if he can kind of adjust that to or figure work around that, then, you know, great.
That will kill the power, indeed, mm-hmm. the ground ball rate like that. But it was a good point. Like in a 15-team league, late round, middle infield, if you're getting 10-10 with a good average, not the worst thing you can find. So
he's not hurting you.
Yeah, definitely something to keep on the radar. Here's a fantasy enigma. If you played fantasy baseball long enough, we've been trying to get the Nick Senzel breakout forever because he was one of the top prospects in baseball and just couldn't stay healthy. Given he's played over 100 games in the last 2 years, which doesn't sound like much, but for Senzel, that's a point in the right direction. The Nats now have him, and they want him to play third base every day, it sounds like. Right now he's projected with an ADP of 420. Are we in on Senzel, or is it just like it's not worth the headache?
Yeah, I don't know. I think if everything breaks right, and that includes mostly kind of staying healthy, maybe there's some upside there. It's kind of tricky to gauge him, though, right? I mean, because he's this kind of former, you know, overall pick, non-tendered, but health has been his issue. Like you said, you know, was it like two seasons ago, he played 110 games, which is the most that he's played. And it's also not like when he was on the field, he was really killing it. Right. Yeah. So, you know, he has a career 77 WRC plus. I'm not super interested. I think there could be some value there though in mono leagues. And I think that, just know the health risk. And, again, I guess if you want to kind of play half glass full, you know, this is someone who does have pedigree. He's got some pop and speed. This is the first time I think he's been given, okay, here you go. You've got a full-time role, you know, in terms of playing time. And if he stays healthy, maybe that unlocks something. He wouldn't be the first person to kind of, you know, go through a change of scenery and do well. But am I betting on it? I'm not betting on it, but, you know, he does have third base and outfield eligibility. So again, you know, depending on if you really are in a deep format, but like I said, I think that mono leagues are better suited for him. sure, you know, if you want to give him a shot. I'm like, about the Nick Senzel experience, but I could be wrong.
No, I understand your about it thing, because, you know, the weird thing, while you were talking, I'm looking, he's going to be 29 this year. He's still so young. He feels like he's been around forever. And so maybe it'll click eventually. Maybe it's the Joey Meneses thing. Like, we'll see it come late in life. I don't know. It's just a health thing, and I just don't feel like stressing about that.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a pivot from the regular agenda here, and I love the little note you left on the outline. It's perfect. Joey Gallo. Joey Gallo signed to the Nationals on Tuesday, and this is a fun one here because, again, another guy that's not that old. He's only 30, which is insane to me. I thought he was so much older. We kind of know who Joey is. Hit ball mile or don't hit ball, period. That's kind of what we get from Joey Gallo, kind of Pedro Serrano. But ADP is close to 700. Now his men's 586, but he's gotten – it's going to come up, you'd imagine, but to how much is the question. So what are your thoughts on Joey Gallo? Like, it'll be entertaining from a fan's perspective, I'll say that much. But for fantasy, what are we thinking?
Yeah, fantasy, I mean, like, you've said it well. I mean, we kind of know what Joey Gallo is, right? You extreme power, extremely high strikeout rates, extremely low batting average. You know, he has a career 197 batting average, but he has a sub 180 batting average over the last two seasons. He also has only hit 19 and then 21 homers in the last two seasons. You know, last time we saw him, you know, he was in Minnesota, and I was looking through some of his splits, and, you know, he went on the IL a little bit, came back, and then just kind of really fell off performance wise. And then he started seeing less playing time. But I looked at his July, and he has a 54% strikeout rate in July and a 55 WRC plus in July. And I was just like, man, so I would be more confident. Like, if I knew that if Gallo was going to hit, you know, 30 plus bombs, maybe I would take it, but that batting average is so low. I'm not going to hold it against you if you pick up Joey Gallo. I mean, we all know why if you pick up Joey Gallo, because it's a dart throw at power. And I will say, you know, the National Stadium, Nationals Park is a good hitter's park. It plays well to lefties. And, you know, again, maybe this is a move where he knows he's got a year contract and he just, like, you know, crushes the ball. Like, that would not be surprising. He has a whole range of outcomes. So I have no problem with taking Joey Gallo, but I think everyone who picks him up, you know what you're getting into, right?
100%. That's the thing with Joey Gallo. You know the experience that you're going to get, and buckle up is the best way I could put it.
For sure.
Anybody else worth noting on the roster? It's a lot of some platoon players, but none of them really stand out for fantasy for me.
Not really. I think we kind of covered most of them.
All right, let's head to the mound, and we kind of joked about it early. It's kind of the same five from last year, and that's not always a good thing.
No. It's not Fab Five.
No, not even close. Like, even a bad time off of Chris Webber won't save this team.
Nope.
We got Josiah Gray. On the bright side, ERA down to 3.9 last year, but all the peripheral ERAs tell you probably not a good thing. Went 159 innings. That was a plus. So I'm trying to find grains of salt here. But his ADP is 384. So I guess if you want a guy that's going to pitch every fifth day, you got that going for you. But what are your thoughts on Josiah Gray?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think overall it's kind of arrows down for me with Josiah Gray. I will say, you know, the one plus for him is that he did cut his home run per nine down. It was at 2.30, and he cut it down to 1.25. And home runs are kind of the Achilles heel of this team across the board. They have like a 1.54 home run per nine, which is worst in the league. So to see that, you know, there's a plus. But like I said, I think, you know, he's striking out less, he's walking more. He did kind of change his pitch mix a little bit from 2023. You know, he threw his fastball less, which is good because it was really not effective. And he was throwing it almost 40% of the time in 2022. He cut that to 17%. He also, he added a cutter and a slider, I believe. A splitter. But those were ineffective. And if you kind of look at Josiah Gray, he was operating with like five pitches and they were all just kind of like, meh, like there was nothing that was really, really great. And so I think moving forward, I don't have a lot of faith with Josiah Gray. I would be interested if he cut down his arsenal a little bit. And if he just worked with, you know, his slider and curve and fastball, maybe he could find some success with that. But I'm not drafting him in fantasy, and I'm happy to be sitting on the fantasy sideline. And if he makes improvement and I miss out, I'm okay with that. I'm not drafting Josiah Gray.
Yeah, it's a frustrating profile because you see some moments where you're like, okay, he might be figuring things out, and then it just unravels yet again. So maybe wait and see approach is the way to go there. Let's talk Mackenzie Gore though, where, you know, young arm, you know, came over with the CJ Abrams deal, gonna be 25 this year. We saw some definite goods this past year. Mm-hmm. Also still some maybe growing pains is what we could call them. ADP of 298 right now. Are you interested in a pitcher like Mackenzie Gore?
I am actually a little interested in Mackenzie Gore. I was going to say, if you contrast him with Josiah Gray, it's like they're just like the opposite, where he did take a step forward in 2023. He improved his strikeout rate. He walked less, but then it was his home run rate that blew up. And so it's just completely opposite of Josiah Gray. But I think he's working with a better arsenal. He does rely on his fastball like close to 60% of the time, which I don't really love. And this year it really got blown up. You know, batters were slugging 503 off of him, and he led 27 home runs and 17 came off of his fastball. So, you know, he needs, and also I guess his fastball, looking at this, it dropped two ticks in velo. So, I don't know what was going on there. He has a really nice curveball and slider to pair with that fastball. And those are really nice pitches for him. They both have whiff percentages over 37%. So I think there's stuff to work with there. I do know that he was dealing with, he kind of faded in the second half and he was giving up a lot of fly balls, which probably translated to some of those home runs. But he was also dealing with some blister issues. And he eventually was shut down a little bit sooner. I think in September, last season. So he still hasn't really played a full season. He's only started 27 games, last year. And, maybe him kind of fading in the second half had to do with just, you know, fatigue and, you know, I don't know. I am interested in Mackenzie Gore. I would take a couple shots on him. He's the only pitcher in this rotation that I would even draft.
Yep, 100% with you on this one. So I can group the last three together for you. Or right. Okay, I was saying we can just group it. You got Jake Irvin. He's like the youngest one in the group. A lot of pitch to contact. We got Patrick Corbin, kind of know that show. And then we got Trevor Williams. So they're all three about the same. I guess the bright side is they're hoping that just Williams and Corbin can eat innings, I guess, is what they're going for. But for fantasy purposes, do any of these three do anything for you?
No, they don't. I no one should be drafting Trevor Williams, just period. And I'm not interested in Jake Irvin, which is less about Jake Irvin. He's kind of just like, I think sometimes people want to take upshots on young pitchers. And I just think that, you know, with Jake Irvin, he's not someone that I'm interested in doing primarily just because he's with an organization that I don't think develops pitchers well. So if you are going to take shots on pitchers, for me, I'm looking at, you know, drafting pitchers from organizations with better, you know, pitching development. So I'm not interested in Jake Irvin. Patrick Corbin, I think people will make a case for the fact, well, you know, you're going to get 160 to 170 innings from him. So in DCs or deeper leagues, where you need that volume, I know people make a case for this. I would say though, with someone like Patrick Corbin, I would make the case against that because what are you getting with those innings? You're not getting strikeouts. You know, his strikeouts have dipped consecutively over six seasons, and he hit a career worst 15.7% strikeout rate last year. So I would rather take up two roster spots with serviceable relievers than taking up one spot with Patrick Corbin. I'm not drafting Patrick Corbin. I don't even care, like even in deeper leagues. So, but I know people talk about that, so I figured I should bring that point up.
It's fair. No, these are all valid points. Like they will be drafted, especially in drafted holds and DCs, those 15 teamers, they will end up on rosters. They're not on any of mine right now, but right. They will end up on rosters for sure. Let's go to the bullpen now, and we'll start with the first guy here, and I do like your other option as well. Kyle Finnegan. This is a guy that was pitching well, got hurt, then came back and did his thing. Ended with 28 saves, which is outstanding from where you're drafting them, because, like, right now going into the draft season, 227 ADP is kind of nice for a guy that might get you 20-ish saves. So what's your thoughts on Finnegan?
Yeah, I think that if you are drafting Kyle Finnegan, I think it's a bottom of the barrel of closers, and I think you shouldn't be dissuaded, or persuaded, I should say, by the 28 saves. It came with, you know, kind of some ugly ratios, and I don't have – he's a bat winner. He's a back-end, I think, closer, and I think that this season you should be looking – expecting more like 20 saves versus 28. I also think the Nationals will try and trade him before the All-Star break. So I think you need to keep that in mind. And I don't know, he's someone, his K rate dropped from 26% in 2022 down to 21.9 in 2023. He also, you know, his hard hit rates and barrel rates have increased each year over the past four seasons. So these are things that you do not want to see. And like I said, I'm kind of more interested in the guy behind him, which is Hunter Harvey.
Yeah, Hunter Harvey, ADP at 277. I know we kind of both liked him last year, got 10 saves while Finnegan was out. They gave Finnegan the job back because at least he was getting the saves. So that's fair. Mm-hmm. But Harvey's waiting in the wings, as you say. So, and he's like 3 years younger than Finnegan, too, which is a plus in the pitching world. So what's your thoughts? Would you be more interested in drafting Harvey in a draft and hold or Finnegan? Because Finnegan, or if I do draft him, which I have a few times, it's usually my reliever three, my closer three, which I'm cool with. Like, let's get him in and out. But Hunter Harvey, what's your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I mean, I think that – I'm interested in Hunter Harvey. He's that next guy up. I think that if the Nationals do trade Finnegan, and assuming Hunter Harvey's healthy, and that is a big thing, he is kind of risky health wise. It is Hunter Harvey. You know, last season he had 10 saves and 19 holds. And he's had a K rate of over 28% the last two seasons. And in terms of his, health, his injury risk, you know, he pitched 60.2 innings last season, which was a career high. You know, he pitched 39.1 the year before, but prior to that, he hasn't cracked double digit innings. So, you know, that innings issue is legitimate, but between the two arms, his arm is the more skilled one. He just doesn't have like the role right now. And I don't know, you know, you can't always say, oh, well, he's going to get the saves in the second half, because, you know, you don't know that for sure, but he is someone that you should be interested in save and holds, and he may get a bump in saves. And it is worth noting that there was a stretch, I believe in June or July, where Hunter Harvey converted 6 of 6 saves in 10 appearances for the Nationals, but then he got hurt, landed on the IL, and then the Nationals just continued to go with Finnegan after that. So, it's just two things. He's the more skilled arm, and the Nationals have turned to him before. He has picked up saves for the team, and they're comfortable going with him. So I do like him a little bit more. I like him more in saves and hold leagues. But if you want to take a shot or back up Kyle Finnegan, Hunter Harvey, I think it's a good pick.
No, I like that a lot. I'm a big, big Hunter Harvey fan. Been wanting it for a long time. He was a big-time prospect with the O's. Comes over to Washington. Mm-hmm. This might be the role for him. All right, let's talk prospects or potential prospects we could see this season. Each team's different. What are we seeing with Washington? Is there anything to maybe get excited about?
Well, I think Nassim Nunez is kind of interesting. He was acquired in the Rule 5 draft. He was shortstop over with Marlins, I believe. And he's someone that is interesting. He was an all-star in the AFL, and he was the MVP of the 2023's Futures game. And a lot of his value lies with his legs. In Double A, he stole 52 bases across 585 plate appearances. And I think with the Nats picking him up in the Rule 5 draft, I think they have a plan for him, which makes sense, which is this kind of this, you know, I was talking about this last year, and it still rings true this year, is that, you know, there's not really a lot of power on this team. And so I think that the Nationals, you know, need to manufacture runs. I think they need to be aggressive on the base paths. you know, if you look at like last year, they were, I think they were 29th in home runs, but they were 12th in stolen bases. So this is something that I think they'll continue to do. I think Nassim Nunez should be coming off the bench, and he's an interesting guy to come off the bench in terms of whether it's a pinch runner or kind of an in-season or an in-game replacement, because he could be a sneaky source of steals. So he's just worth, I think I flagged him just because I think that he's interesting. He's worth watching, and it's interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see how the Nationals actually utilize him.
And all those rule five guys are great to keep in mind, because just because they don't look super flashy, well, they're going to keep their job or they're gone. So that makes it interesting as well. Anybody else of reference for you on the Nats?
You know, I had put both Dylan Cruz and James Wood up, and I kind of clumped them together in the sense that these are guys that I don't think you should be necessarily going out and drafting and stashing right now. I think these are guys that they're number one and two prospects of the organization. And I think that if they see time, it'll be, at the tail end of the season. Dylan Cruz, he's the number one prospect in the Nationals. He's part of that LSU championship team. And they took him second overall. He's got some plus power and speed and on-base ability, but he has struggled. He did struggle a little bit in Double A. So he's kind of, I think, between the two, I don't know. I guess it kind of depends how he does it in Triple A. So we'll see. And then James Wood, he came over in the Soto deal. He brings, a ton of power and speed to the table. And he's this huge guy. He's 6'6", 240. And he'll likely start the season in AAA. And both these guys can take over in the outfield. So it really kind of depends how well they do in AAA, and then how things are going, with the Nationals outfield situation, which is really thin. And if that's not going well, they may bring these guys up. But like I said, don't stash them now, because, we may not see them. And if we do, it's at the tail end of the season. One guy who I do think that we'll see, and it's on the pitching side, is DJ Hurz. He came over in the Jamer Candelario trade. And he's a lefty who's got a really nice changeup. And he kind of pairs it with a slider and a fastball. We talked about, I think that the Nationals pitching is just really atrocious. And I don't think that if Hurz is doing really well, I think he'll start. I don't know if they'll put him in kind of like as in the bullpen, or they'll try and stretch him out and try and use him as a reliever. They brought up Jake Urban in May of last season. So he's interesting to watch. And I think that of all of these guys, Hurts, just kind of flag him and see where he comes up, because he has good stuff. He's a lefty, and the Nationals don't really have a lot of options, when it comes to pitchers. So he could be interesting.
Yeah, a fun end game target in DCs. Mm-hmm. He's got an ADP of 750, been taken once since January 3rd. So that's one of those, literally, if you're just looking for a last round kind of target, that I like that. And like a lot of what you said, especially these prospects, the Rule 5, guys coming over, it's all these guys in trades. Mm-hmm. And that's how we saw, like, C.J. Abrams, Mackenzie Gore. And you said it at the top of the show, like, they're rebuilding, they're trading guys out, they're doing it the right way, the best they can. They got to figure out how to get more pitching, that's for sure. I'm not speaking, something crazy here. It's got the obvious stuff. But they're at least going in the right direction, it feels like, at times. But for you, as a Nationals fan, what are your thoughts or expectations for 2024?
Well, I still think I would like to see them add maybe another arm to the rotation, whether it's just a veteran. This is a really young team on both sides of the ball. Hopefully, they make a move. I would like to see a move made, because otherwise it's just, they're running on fumes. I just don't know. I think for every, two steps, every step, I guess, these hitters make, I think it's like two steps back when you combine that with the pitchers. Like I said, I'm concerned that the pitching will kind of keep this rebuild kind of down. So I would like to see some changes there. But outside of that, I really like the direction it's going hitting wise. Like I said at the beginning of the show, it's really fun to see some of these prospects prospects play. And, it, you know, who knows, maybe you'll get a nice season out of Senzel. Maybe Joey Gallo will go off. Maybe this will spark some sort of, you know, something. Listen, we're still going to finish at the end of the division, but, you know, you got to have hope, right?
Yep. You got to have hope. You got to have fun. Baseball's baseball. And that's all that really matters in the end. And you never know with these young teams, like, you got nothing to lose. Like we've seen, I'm not saying they're going to do what the Marlins have done recently, but we've seen them a couple of years where the Marlins, like, it's out of nowhere, but they also have the pitching to go with it. But there's a difference. So I'm with you. And there's some cheaper free agent arms still out there. So it would be nice to see a little something. I'm with, like, a Seth Lugo would have been great there. Michael Walker, but those guys want to go.
Or something, someone.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see what happens. But next year or whatever, hopefully it's better. We'll see. But time will tell. But once again, let everybody know where they can find you and all that good stuff.
Yeah, you can find me over at Fantrax. I'll start kind of pushing some stuff out as we get closer to the start of baseball season. And again, a little hit and miss, but over at Twitter, I am at LK Auerbach. So those are the two places that you can find me.
Well, I always appreciate you joining me. Great chatting with you. And I look forward to doing it again sometime.
Thanks for having me, Bubba.
All right, everybody. This is Bench with Bubba, episode 642, your Washington Nationals season preview. Catch you all next time.